Okay.
Take a deep breath. Relax. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's commence. Hello, my name is Sajid Kundu, and I'm gonna talk about the paper modeling virtualized applications using machine learning techniques. This work has been done in collaboration with Dr. Raju Rangaswamy, my academic advisor, Dr. Ming Zhao from Florida International University, also along with Dr. Ajay Gulati from VMI and Dr. Kaushik Dutta from National University of Singapore. So, virtualization is quite, for the last few years we have seen an escalating growth of virtualization. Now, if we are to sum up what are the major benefits of using virtualization, the first thing that will come to our mind is that savings of physical resources. Before, a critical application needed to be run in dedicated physical machines, but after virtualization comes into picture, we need fewer physical machines to run those all applications, since applications are being encapsulated in their virtual machines, and a lot of virtual machines are being consolidated into fewer physical nodes. So there is a huge amount of savings of physical resources, and the savings not only comes from just the reduction of number of servers, but also comes from the reduction in power consumption and maintenance. And there is another benefit that was assumed that virtualization will help is reducing the complexity of data center management. Because since we have so much controls over the application performance, it was assumed that the complexity of running the data center will go down. But is it so? Apparently it's not. Because just like any benefit, it comes up with some major drawbacks. And I'm going to give you a basic example, and the major drawback comes in the case of performance interference. Let me give you an example. Let's say the virtual machine 1 running an application, and it's issuing the I request to a LAN. Everything seems to be fine in this case, but what happens when another application comes into picture, is inside another virtual machine, and it tries to issue the I request to the same LAN? And in this case, the performance of application gets degraded by the I request arising from the virtual machine 2. Things could get even more complicated. Think about it, because in storage, it could be shared across multiple hosts. So another virtual application running in VM3, run by another host V, could issue the same I request to the same storage device. So the performance of this virtual machine 1 depends on the I request or the competition from application 2 and application 3. So there is a huge problem due to this performance interference on shared resources, and not only on storage, but also on processor cache and so on. But you can argue that we know it. When we go to consolidation, there should be some interference. But that's given. But do you know that what are the effects of those interference? Do you really understand when an application is being run into the same storage, how the I/O request from those applications could impact the performance of another application? We don't understand those effects properly. And there is another scenario in the cloud environment. Clients are now using infrastructure as a service, and cloud service providers are giving you virtual those capacities in terms of virtual machines. So client can rent memory and computing capacity in the form of VMs to host their applications. And customers are charged based on some flat fees. So service providers can only guarantee how much resources you can have. So if you say 512, I need 512 megabytes memory, that's the only thing the service providers can guarantee. But there is no guarantee on performance. Now, clients have to figure out how much memory or CPU they need to rent. So that's a question that the client has to figure out themselves. But clients really don't have understanding of how the resource allocation will translate into actual application performance. So what happens, they either resort to over-provisioning or they suffer critical performance violations. But is it the ideal scenario? Why don't we go from charging based on capacity to a scenario where we charge based on the performance level? In this case, customers will be guaranteed customers will be guaranteed about the performance allocation, and they will be paying for the amount they're actually experiencing. In this case, it will benefit both the clients and the administrators, since clients will be paying for exactly what they're receiving, and the administrators will have incentive to save resources so that they can use those saved resources to host other applications. But what we need to go to those service level agreement level performance scheme, like where we charge based on performance level, we need following things. First, we need to understand what are the crucial resource parameters that will have a commanding control over the application performance. Then we need to model the application performance. Then we need to tackle the performance interference, and all of the solutions we should suggest, it should cater to any type of application and irrespective of the underlying hypervisor platform or hardware we are using. But modeling is challenging. Why? Because as you will see at the course of the talk, is that since all these resource consumptions and contentions have a really complex and nonlinear effect on the application performance, and that kind of complex influence cannot be characterized by a closed-loop mathematical function or even by some complex evolutionary model. So we need further optimizations to handle the application performance model. Here is the rest of the talk for this outline of the rest of the talk. We'll briefly talk about the related work in this domain. Then we'll talk about the parameters we find for our work, and then we design our application performance. After that, we evaluate how we are doing with in terms of our performance modeling design. And after that, we're going to talk about how we're going to use our performance modeling to help accurate VM sizing. And we're going to conclude after that. So let's begin with some talk about the related works in this domain. So there are several works going on in this field. So we can classify into the modeling techniques those works employ. First up about the control theory. It has been used for resource allocations in virtualized data center, also to handle CPU interference in cloud. So as the regression analysis, which is used like in problems like modeling memory usage, and also automated performance diagnosis and remedial actions in data centers. Similarly, Bayesian networks also have been done to construct our performance violation history, also to fingerprint, also to the same problem of the classification of similar problems and automating the power recovery. Support vector machine is also used in estimating power consumption. And recently, in our previous work, we have used artificial neural network to answer the specific what-if questions. Like, if you ask about, like, given a certain amount of allocation and contention, what would be our performance in terms of what would be the performance of the application is experiencing? The artificial neural network answers those questions. We dealt with it partially in our previous work, but we faced several problems while we transform it to model more complex workloads. So next we are going to talk about the model parameter selection, but before going to the details of the model parameter selection, I want to give you a big picture of where all those components fit in. Let's think that there are several virtual machines running, each virtual machine running each application, and virtual machine monitor is responsible for allocating those resource parameters. So these resource parameters could be controlled or observed. Now under a certain value of those resource parameters, each application experiences certain performance. We call it application performance metric. We change those resource parameters to different values and register application performances under those allocations. Once we get sufficient amount of data, we feed this data set to build performance model for each application. So here we need separate models for each application virtual machine. Once we build this performance model, later we ask for a come up with certain allocation and contention, and the performance model will be able to tell you what will be the predicted application performance. So this is the overall goal. Let's focus on these resource parameters for now. Now, here's a high-level idea like what we follow for selecting the parameters selection. But I want to give you an overall takeout from this slide. It's like in the past, like researchers have correlated application performance with several performance metrics, a huge number of statistics. But in this work, we are not really focusing on micro-level characterization of application. We are rather interested in how do we control application from a higher, from a macro-level perspective. If we go to the higher-level perspective, we might lose some finite level of characterization, but we'll show later that our like whatever we chosen from even from a higher level perspective helps to understand the application performance and helps to achieve better VM sizing. Let's first talk about the CPU. There are two schools of thoughts while picking parameters for CPU. One is based on utilization, which is basically mapping CPU resource usage to application performance, and there is another CPU allocation. But since in our work we are more focusing on controlling the application, we chose as allocation as our control knob. And we did our experiments in ESX in this case, and VMware ESX provides three levels of control, like reservation, which provides a lower bound the amount of CPU it can have, and also limit, which provides an upper bound to the amount of CPU it can have. So we chose CPU limit as a control knob now to provide, to ensure that the application is at least experiencing that amount of CPU, we set the reservation and limit to be identical. We follow the same principle for memory, but like it now, it gets complicated when we talk about the storage. Because why? Because in storage, we cannot put a hard limit on the megabytes per second or IOPS. So there are some relative prioritizations, IOPS prioritization we can enforce, but most of the storage arrays do not provide strong isolation characteristics. So we cannot really control how much limit on megabytes per second or IOPS a virtual machine can have, but we have to at least understand how we can model the computation at least. So several things comes into, so what is the appropriate metric for contention? Now, we found that IO latency observed by the virtual machine is a good indicator of contention. And it also encompasses all the differences that might arise due to variations in request size, variations in sequentiality. And it also handles the fact that the storage could be distributed and can be handled across all the physical hosts. So all these questions can be encompassed with the VMI latency. So now we talk about what we select, how we select the parameters. Now we see how these parameters play an important role in the application performance. And to register that, we varied the CPU in the first case. In the next case, we varied the memory, and we registered how the performance changes. And we used two Ruby workloads and three 5-inch workloads. As you can see from this, and we also did the same experiments by controlling IO latency. As you can see from this, all these three graphs, like different applications behave differently with respect to the allocations of resources. Not only that, applications have non-linearity and non-smooth behavior as it changes the allocation boundaries. So the key takeout from this slide is that applications behave quite complexly, in a quite complex fashion with respect to resource allocation. And we need to have a model that can capture this complexity. Now we're going to the application performance model designing. So there's a few steps we employed. We collected data, as I told you in the previous slide, by changing the resource parameters. Once we collect several data, we separate out few of the data set and use it for training the model. After we train the model, the rest of the data set we use for testing, to to have a better accuracy, in all our experiments, our training set and testing sets are completely non-identical. If we achieve satisfiable accuracy, we stop at that level. If we don't achieve that satisfiable accuracy, we repeat this this process. Now, about the modeling techniques. We first start with simpler modeling techniques. First with the regression family, and then with the evolutionary family. In the regression family, we experimented with simple linear regression. We experimented with linear regression with quadratic terms. We experimented with also the pairwise interactive terms to encapsulate the combining effect of different application performance metrics, different resource allocation metrics. On the other hand, in the evolutionary tools, we try with artificial neural network and also the support vector machine-based regression. What I found with the regression family is that they're really incapable of modeling those complex trends, since because there's a closed-loop mathematical formula and they cannot really capture the different changes, the different slopes as it moves across different allocation boundaries. On the other hand, the evolutionary tools are found to be handling those complex characteristics. But just by applying those evolutionary tools may not guarantee the acceptable accuracy for all the applications. Why? Let's look at this graph. Here we tried all the five benchmarks and we collected statistics of average errors and 90th percentile errors for all those workloads. As you can see in this table, the top two workloads, the Ruby browsing and Ruby speaking, they suffer a lot. I mean, even using artificial neural network, you see that the average 90th percentile errors are quite high. And we registered the similar observation in support vector machine as well. So what's the takeaway is the simplest application of those machine learning models are not enough, and because the errors are too high for some workloads. How do we deal and why is this happening? So I illustrate with a simple graph. Here we just sort the application, sort the output of all those testing points. And on the y-axis, we show the corresponding prediction error. As you can see, the prediction errors are concentrated on the lower region of the output boundaries. So why don't we model, separate these output points into two chunks and model these regions separately? We exactly do that in our work, but we do it in an automated fashion and with the help of clustering algorithm. Let's talk about with a simple example. Here's a Ruby's browsing workload that changes its application output from 6 requests per second to 126 requests per second. We feed all those output values to a clustering algorithm, and it breaks it into two clusters. In this case, it might break into four clusters or five clusters, but in this specific case, it breaks into two clusters. One cluster says the output changes from 6 requests per second to 24 requests per second, another changes from 26 to 126 requests per second. But now we need to map those output to the input boundaries. That's exactly what we do, that we map this output value to cluster output values to the input, and we found that cluster boundaries are really defined by the memory, and in this case that the first cluster defines that everything less than 256 megabytes should belong to cluster 1, everything above 256 megabytes belong to cluster 2. And we create separate models for these two clusters and use it for prediction depending on the value of the allocations. And there is a key thing that these clusters might overlap, and there are several details related to how we can handle the overlapping of two clusters. The details are in the paper. Now, let's talk about the evaluation. So we did it in this framework. The important thing is the I/O contention generator. In this case, we ran FIO workload in a large virtual machine and changed the number of outstanding IOs to create different levels of contention. So first, we talk about how the global modeling is doing in Ruby's browsing. As you can see in this case, if both with ANN and SVN, the error bars are quite high. The average error, for example, using ANN is way close to 70%. Same behavior is observed in Ruby's bidding as well. But once we apply the submodeling, you can see that our average error drops to an acceptable range, at both for ANN and SVN, and both for Ruby's browsing and Ruby's bidding workloads. So the key takeout from this lesson is that there is a substantial reduction of prediction errors with submodeling. But we talk about only the average metric and 90th percentile metric, but how we do with respect to the overall output range or overall prediction or overall testing data set? To confirm that, we first sort the actual request per second for both Ruby's browsing and Ruby's bidding. This is the actual output. And we plot the corresponding predicted values for ANN, and we plot the corresponding predicted values for the SVN. As you can see, that the lines are mostly overlapping each other. So the takeaway is that the predicted output values is closely following the actual output. So far we have talked about the performance modeling, but how we can use this performance modeling for accurate VM sizing for the cloud. Here is the idea of the VM sizing. In the VM sizing work, you can specify your target performance and a tolerable level of latency. And our job is to come up with a CPU and memory values that will guarantee that target performance, and also will do it in an optimal way so that we don't waste any extra amount of resources. To do that, this is an experiment. We come up with 20 different target points across Ruby's browsing and FileMail web server workloads, and all the target performance are here is normalized to 1, and we plot the actual performance we observe when applying those estimated CPU and memory allocation. As you can see that in all cases, we achieve the target performance, and also the estimated CPU sizes are quite distributed in nature. So we really cannot, like usually Amazon or those Amazon-like the cloud service providers, they usually provide some specific sizes like small, medium, or large. But here we found that just picking a specific size may not be able to guarantee achieve your target performance. Now, we achieve target performance, but what are we doing about the optimality or the saving of resources? We have results in the paper, but just to summarize, like in 65% of the sizes across 2 workloads, we are completely optimal, and we are nearly optimal for the rest of the targets across CPU and memory. So here's the conclusion. So we identify resource parameters for creating performance models. We show that the ANN and artificial neural network support vector machine are useful in characterizing those applications. But we need enhancement to improve the prediction accuracy, and we provided those enhancements and see that those enhancements really work. And our modeling framework can be used for effective VM sizing. Thank you for listening, and I'm open to take any questions.
Look at the time.
23.
Okay. 23
minutes. 23 to 25. So I thought this went much better than last time. Much, much better. Not just in terms of time, but also in terms of content and delivery. So you certainly put in work since the last one. So if there are any high-level comments about the content, we should take them now.
Ricardo?
Well, I have specific questions about how you deep source stuff.
We can talk about it later, but about the style, content, is okay?
Yeah.
Understandable?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I needed somebody who hasn't seen it before.
So I think you have a question about cache content. So how do you account for cache contention in your work? Do you account for cache contention?
No, we haven't tackled cache contention in our work.
Do you think that that is important?
That is important for micro-level application characterizations. And also in recent works, we have seen that the application performance could degrade due to interference in CPU-level cache. But since in the commodity hypervisors, we do not have techniques to allocate caches or to model cache contention accurately, we haven't dealt with it in our work. But we are willing to look at it in future. If some new technique comes up for better cache separation or cache contention, we'll definitely look up this matter.
Is another question that you might get asked is most of the application these days are, and for those applications, how would you do your performance modeling?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Most of that it's rare multi-tier, so the same application would be handled by multiple VMs. And how do you handle multi-applications?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, but in our work, we have tried to fit like all the tiers on the same virtual machine and model it from end to end. So in multi-tier scenario, we are willing to do the same thing. So we are going to take the performance from the highest tier of the application and use that application metric for our performance modeling.
Right, so I think here you are allowed to be a little,
I think best to apologize. You should be more confident, and I think multi-tier applications, you can try to model each one of the VMs separately.
Okay, but what about the end-to-end performance?
Yeah, so what a lot of applications do, they allow you to mesh to every tier. So if you look at all the application monitoring tools, they actually give you latency of each tier. So you can say that in a multi-tier application, we would take the latency of each tier to be the application performance metric, and then size every VM in the tier separately.
Okay, but how do we, because each tier is interdependent among themselves, so how do we handle that?
True, but the latency of the tier itself, you know if that particular tier is performing better or worse. So you have to make sure that every tier is within a certain latency to try to give a certain application latency to the end user.
The other way I'm thinking of addressing this is to say, okay, now you do not have just three input parameters, but as many input parameters as the number of tiers.
Mm.
And then you have one output parameter, which is the performance metric. And it's okay to say that you haven't done something yet, right? Because you cannot have all the answers at the end of your presentation. Say this is something we haven't tried, but a couple of things we can try. One, you can say what Ajay said, and you can also say that, well, we could try with
modeling each tier separately.
Modeling all the tiers together by having more input parameters. And it's not clear how our machine learning techniques would do with more input parameters, but something which could be tried and we would like to try in the future.
Okay.
I think you can another way to start the answer would be you can say, it's a very great question. That's one of the next logical steps that we are looking into now that we have done a single VM modeling. And then you can talk of some ideas in this direction. And then you can talk about doing per tier latency as a performance metric and trying to model the VM.
Yeah.
There's one thing that from HP Labs. I think probably on US is one of Charlie's papers. And I think that will be the market here. And the same guy understand. So they could all probably distribute each CPU allocation as a vector, it is not just like the CPU allocation on one tier, but all the tiers, then you can have all the parameters.
I think that's what Raju is trying to say. Right?
Yeah, that's a better way to present it. It's like each dimension is a vector, and that's a single scalar, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to answer that question. And also what Ajay mentioned, if you have per tier information which are independent of other tiers, then you could also construct multiple models.
Okay.
And then chain them together to do the final prediction.
Okay.
So you should probably take a look at that, right? Like
I just remember.
Yeah,
right.
I think it's not
right.
Yeah,
I remember.
There is another question also that I think you might get missed. So most of the applications that you have today, they have different transaction mixes. And based on the transaction mix that you are seeing, the performance model would be. So what transaction mix are you using in your experiments?
I'm using a uniform transaction mix. So the transaction mix doesn't change in those applications.
So, how do you know that that mix is representative of the actual application?
You can think about it is because, for example, the Ruby's workloads, I've tried with the bidding mix and the browsing mix. So, in our work, so far we have looked about the more, put it into words, like, sort of more steady state mixes of those workloads. So I agree that the workload mix could change abruptly, but we are looking at it for like a more steady state representation of those workloads. Like it is behaving exactly like either in the bidding mode or in the browsing mode.
True. So in order to do VM sizing, you would have to evaluate multiple steady state scenarios which you think cover all the possible transaction mixes within a day.
Exactly.
So I think the point here is that you have to address both the modeling issue as well as the VM sizing issue. And so you can speculate in your answers, right? And that's fine. You can go into speculative mode and say, okay, we haven't done this, but one of the things that may be possible is so and so. Certainly feel free to speculate. Don't just restrict yourself with the things that you've already done.
Okay.
That's the message I'm trying to convey.
Okay.
Yeah, anything you haven't done, you can say this is something we are looking at.
If someone asks you a question that you don't know the answer to, come up with the best answer you can. Say this is something which you would like to explore in the future, we could take these possible directions. And there would probably be a question on overhead. Right? So what is the overhead of modeling? And what does the administrator need to do to use your work?
Yeah, the first overhead you can think about is collecting sufficient number of training data. Like how much training data you need to model to have a acceptable accuracy for your performance modeling. So we have experiments in our paper where what we did is that we find out the optimal size of the training data set and come up with the best accuracy. But you also should show what happens that you have only liberty to collect few amount of data because you are restricted by time. So even in that case, we show that even with a few trial runs of the experiments, you can come up with a pretty much not the best accuracy, but the acceptable accuracy so that you can work on those models. So that's one type of modeling overhead, and another type of modeling overhead is that how long those machine learning models take to train once you give those data, how long those machine learning models take to train themselves. But it's just a few seconds, 1, 2, or 3 seconds it takes to do the modeling once you feed the training data. But the most of the overhead it comes from the collection of the training data.
So how many data points would I have in your experience?
Roughly, for the Ruby's workloads, I used around 160 to 200 training data points. And for the FileBench workloads, I also roughly used around ranging from 70 data points to 130 data points.
Okay. How long does it take to get one data point?
Around 10 minutes, I would say. 5 to 10 minutes. At least you need 5 minutes to have a steady state measurement of the performance.
So I see. So that's roughly almost 25 hours, depending on the benchmark that you pick.
Yes.
Right. So how would the admin go about doing this? He would reserve one day of equipment or hardware to run.
What they can do is that before deploying an application, they could run that application in another staging environment. So it's like an identical environment to the deployment facility, and they can run those workloads in that staging area to collect those training points. Once they have collected like 20, 30 data points, they can start doing the actual deployment in the real setting and keep collecting more data in the staging area to improve their performance models for later on.
I think one thing you can mention that application designers, even today, they actually do load testing before deploying the application. So staging area is not something which unheard of or which is rare. People actually, before they deploy an application in the real field, they do some load testing in a staging area where they try amount of load and figure out what's going on and how much load the application can take. And then you can say, along with doing some loosening of the application, they can also vary some of the VM parameters, and that would help with the creation of the model.
Okay, that's nice. Better answer.
It's good we have a day.
Do you have any questions?
I'd rather start the first part.
So I guess it over slide by slide. I actually have a hard stop at 9, and
yes,
can we quickly go over slide by slide and then just discuss some comments on those?
You have any questions, the other people? So I might want to take the questions first and then go through the relations. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Another person speaks randomly.
The training point?
Yes. Training function?
No, it's not picked randomly. It will pick to at least cover the entire boundary, entire performance boundary. So let's say you are in a real application, real setting. You have a host where you can change your CPU from 100 megahertz to 2 gigahertz. So how do you go about collecting data? What I do in the state is I just chop it into four parts, like collect data at 100 megahertz, 500 megahertz, 1 gigahertz, and 2 gigahertz. So just cover the input space more uniformly. That's the overall idea I took to collect training data.
So there is an actual training algorithm.
Yeah.
Where you refine the points that you get based on the feedback
From the
accuracy feedback from the initial collection.
So, for example, let's say some workloads are not dependent on CPU. Maybe they're dependent on memory and I/O. In those cases, after you collect 3 data points, you see that, oh, there is no change in the performance across CPU. So you can stop collecting data on the CPU dimension, so collect more finer data on memory and I/O latency. Yes. So slide 1 is the title slide, so from slide 2?
Yeah. So actually I have a high level comment here on slide 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
And the high level comment is that I feel that 4 we should start with.
4?
Yeah, basically 4 gives the use case of the overall high-level paper. And you want to figure out how to size the VMs, people are doing over-provisioning, and it's not clear how to avoid the performance violations. think of, the slide 2 and 3 that you have, they sort of give an answer on to why this problem is complicated in the natural environment.
I think if we start with slide 4, then our, my slide 2 becomes useless. So I
actually think it is useless. You don't know.
Probably people know about consolidation for a long time. So
I mean, it's readably, everybody knows virtualization, and spending 1 minute saying that it consolidated 6 servers to 2 is not very useful. And the only thing you're pointing out is cost saving. There are 5 other benefits of virtualization which are not even on the slide.
That's true.
Here is my workflow based on the slides that you have. All the slides are pretty good. I mean, the slide 4 is actually pretty good. I think you can start with slide 4 to say that more and more people their workloads in virtual machines. It could be a public cloud or it could be a private cloud. But one of the main things that, one of the main problems is that VMs are very fuzzy balls of computation, which you have to size them. And if you oversize them, then you are not getting all the benefits of the virtualization. But doing sizing in order to get application level performance is very hard. So today people are actually doing oversizing of VMs because that makes sure that you get application performance. And then you can go into the transition slide to say this problem, the sizing of the VMs, this problem is very hard in virtual environment because of all this contention and multiple layers that you have, which are very different from physical environment. In physical environment, there is no sharing. In virtual environment, everything is shared. And
okay,
that highlights the problem. It's hard to do proper sizing. Why is it hard to ensure application level performance? And then slide 2 can just go away.
Okay.
But I have a small comment on the, I was just waiting to come to this slide 4. My opinion is that you are not describing the problem that you're solving. You're describing the macro level problem. Okay, you're talking about the performance correlation, you're talking about whatever charging based on performance level. But if you look at the peak cycle comes up and you say whatever charging based on the performance levels, but that's not the problem you're solving. Really.
Actually,
there is a bubble.
I'm trying to model the virtual machine based on the, or I'm trying to, I want to build a model that will predict the performance of the some estimated sizes. At no point you're saying that explicitly.
I think this charging based on performance levels is a detail. That's not the core point. I completely agree.
Okay.
I think you're using that as a transition into the next slide.
Yes.
But if the next slide is slide number 3,
then it should change.
Then this bubble needs to change.
Yeah. It's probably how to size VMs would be come into here.
Yeah, I think you should, the high level could be that how to size V in order to meet application level performance.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And then you say that this split up into two parts. First, we need to understand how performance get affected
by resource allocation.
By resource allocation and then?
Then contention.
And then, and contention and accounting for this in the actual sizes, in creating actual sizes.
Okay. I agree.
And I think the color scheme we should keep consistent. You have too many color changes from slide to slide, and they get very jarring. So on some slide it is.
I think it was done in purpose. I think here because red is, because interference is bad, and green because it's good, and yellow because it's dicey.
The fact that you have some semantics going on, you need a manual before the talk.
That's true. I didn't notice the colors were changing. It's sort of probably less color sensitive than Ajay. But I agree, the color should be consistent. Yeah. Especially with the bubbles, right? I mean, the bubbles is the message. And then whether the message is a good message or a negative message or you don't know what the message is, I think that you don't need to worry about adding colors to associate with that. Yeah. Just make the bubbles consistent.
Okay.
Okay, so the next one is what do we need? So we reordered some of the slides. You got
yes.
that, right? Okay. Slide 5 is what do we need?
So slide 4 goes first, then comes slide 3, and then comes slide.
This, here the title, what do we need, is kind of again an abstract title. Like you probably want to be a little bit more specific. What do we need for what?
Yeah, I think the title we should change.
I think as I talk, I described it.
You probably did, but then if people don't hear that few words where you expand the title, they're stuck with this slide for the next 45 seconds with a title which says what do we need, and they're trying to figure out what do we need for what, right? It's better to make the title itself descriptive.
Okay.
I mean, I think the title here, you should say how to model application performance, how to model. And I don't know if the last point is even needed here, FTD, change in performance neutral solution.
Probably right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, think about making all the titles self-describing. Right? I mean, this is just a bit too abstract.
Okay.
What do we need, right? I'm confused when I look at this. Think about whether the slide can largely stand by itself without your words, because some people may just tune out your voice, and even if they do that, they should still be able to get most of the message from what your slide has.
Okay.
Yeah. The outline is fine.
Yeah, actually, the comment, if I may make here, is when you show your this bubble that comes with the message, I feel that the fact of the text is a bit jarring. I would have liked this bubble to come at the bottom or somewhere where the slide remains and then the bubble shows up on bottom.
Yeah, I guess that's fine. I think if this bubble is not going to stay for too long, it's okay. But if it's going to stay like that for 30 seconds, then I agree with Ajay.
Okay, we can discuss this later. It's a minor point, but it does jar that this bubble comes and then it comes. Usually it's nicer to have it separately.
Maybe you can make the bubble a little less big.
I think when I meant it, I wanted to not focus on the slide text at that time. I just wanted to focus on the bubble at that time.
I think that's important. I mean, that you want people to just focus on this bubble without getting distracted from what.
I mean, if you don't hear the previous slide, just
right.
I can't help it.
Right, but okay. I mean, just having one bubble for 30 seconds is probably not a good idea.
No, I'll probably have it like 10 seconds to have a one sentence.
On slide 5, when the bubble comes, it says modeling is extremely challenging. Here, it almost seems like you feel that it is challenging, but you haven't really shown that it is. And I think it would be good to mention here that you would show in some next coming slides why the VM performance.
I think I did that.
Did you
say
that?
Yeah, I said that we are going to, for the course of the talk, we are going to show why it is challenging and how do we deal to resolve the issues.
So then it's good. I think I might have missed it then, because I was typing comments and email while you
Right. Just a quick note on the capitalization. You probably want to capitalize it correctly, right? So here there's no need to make M and E and C capital.
Okay.
And B, U, T, you don't need to make U and D capital.
Okay.
Right. Just, I mean, think of it as you're writing a sentence and how you would capitalize it.
Okay.
Otherwise, I mean, I can see why you might think capitalization is useful, because Okay, there's just one sentence and it's like a title. But it's not really a title, it's just a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a message. So use consistent capitalizing.
I was saying that you probably don't need that extremely. You're saying volume is challenging.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Shall we move on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to wrap up in 2 minutes.
Okay. Okay, then related work, I think is okay.
Related work, just put the citations.
Citations?
Yeah, okay. Just put the very abbreviated citations. Because although most people won't see it, at least the authors will understand, know which is their work.
Okay.
Thank you. And that's easy to do.
This is good, I think.
This is slide number 10.
Yeah.
Fine.
So slide number 10, I think it's too crowded. Why one to VMN? So many games do we need to show? Why can't we just have one VM here?
That's probably less confusing. I just say because we are doing par VM performance modeling. So might be a better idea.
Yep. That's fine. Yeah, simplify this slide.
And I think once you do one VM, you can increase the font size, performance model font size is kind of small.
Yeah.
And then just make sure the errors are not on the text.
Yeah.
Okay. I think this is good too.
Parameter selection. Is there a bubble after this?
No.
No. That's all I make sure that.
You are just scared of a bubble. You struggle with this slide a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to practice.
The parameter selection slide 12. Yeah.
I need to practice probably.
Yeah. Yeah, the bullets for the storage are kind of awkward, and but I've written comments to what I think.
So, I think one of the bullets for storage is wrong. When you say no limit, on megabytes per second or IOPS, that's not true. We do have limit even now. The problem is not the lack of limit. The problem is it's not clear how to set the limit. No, what's the total IOPS capacity of the storage is. I think the first bullet on storage should take off.
Okay.
So I think what you can say, yeah, go ahead, somebody was saying.
No, you actually do not really mean no limit. What you mean is that it's undefined.
Yeah.
Limit is undefined.
Yeah.
Limit is unspecifiable or something like that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that you can specify the limit.
And I think another way to say the same thing would be you can say no strict performance isolation. When you talk, you always think through it. You say that most arrays today don't provide good storage isolation, good isolation for storage. And then you can mention it, that it's very hard to provide isolation for storage, but the capacity is unknown, and it's not clear how many IOPS one can get from the storage array. And since storage is a distributed source, modeling contention also becomes hard.
Okay.
So, you say we looked at multiple metrics, for example, megabytes first trying to control megabyte, second trying to control IOPS, but again, because of the workload, it becomes a problem. If you are doing IOPS, then the sequential workload gets hurt. If you are doing megabytes, then workload with large IOPS gets hurt. And because of all these complexity, using these metrics wasn't very useful. And we have experiment paper to show why it doesn't work very well. And hence, finally, we settled on VMIO latency that actually captures the overall contention in spite of all the complexity which is there in the system.
Okay.
So Sajid, again, we're using contention and interference.
Yes.
Just use one of them. Stick to either interference or contention, but don't mix it to terms. Because I think the third slide you use interference.
Mm-hmm. Slide 30.
Yeah, slide 13 is okay. you probably want to say what you're weighing on the x-axis up front.
Okay.
Before you go into the trends and how the...
Okay, maybe on the first picture,
yeah.
I'll just say that in x-axis I'm varying the parameters.
Okay.
And y-axis I'm measuring the performance.
Yes.
Then I can describe the trends.
Yes.
Okay. 15 is...
it's okay.
This is good. 16? 16, I had an issue with how you animated this.
Yeah.
So you animated the regression and then you put the evolutionary tools and then you talked about the negatives of the regression and then the positives of the evolutionary tools. I would prefer if you animate this way.
This one? Okay.
Yeah, so you talk about regression, say what the problems are and then say okay,
evolutionary
tools address some of those problems and here are the advantages.
Okay.
That's
well, I think that he did a great job on this slide. And on this slide, I think the colors are also helping a lot.
But the colors, you have to be careful because some projectors will not clearly show the black on the red. Right? You may want to make the red a little less dark.
Okay. That's good.
So that the contrast is increased.
Okay.
Yeah. For all your colors, including this green, make the green a little less green.
Okay.
A little less.
I have a minor niche, which I think if you can take... the limited power of modeling and capable of modeling are not on the same line.
Yeah.
You can align them next to each other. Oops.
Okay. I need to go, Sandy. Okay. I'll come back and collect my phone.
Okay, I think I can continue.
Yeah, continue.
On slide 17.
I think this again could be just me, but I find this increase the font and making it red to be really jarring.
But I think we have talked about it and we decided to do it this way to focus the attention of the audience to those specific numbers.
Yeah, so I think this is again a low priority ask, but if you get time, it may be a good idea to even convert this into a bar graph. Then highlight a bar graph with arrows or by circling it or something.
Yeah.
That was good.
It's not a big issue. It's take 10 minutes. Okay. So
otherwise it's fine.
Slide 18.
So here it's a little confusing because you're essentially grouping the first group on toward in the x-axis is like almost empty. And you have the elements that are sort of outliers.
I guess what he wanted was
to the x-axis, but it's like non-intuitive because you have elements that are sort of outside any of the groups.
Yeah, just make it bigger to pull the data.
The first oval, instead of making it on the x-axis, make it so that it englobes all the other elements.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, just like this.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But, I mean, the one in the right is fine, but the one in the left just makes the stretch it to include the upper parts.
Yeah.
Stretch it to.
But what you mean is just the X.
Yeah, I mean, so the group includes all the elements that are outside
in the
right now.
Okay. Those bubbles I understood differently. I thought they were
the X ranges. I was talking about the
X ranges. Yeah, it is the X ranges, but it's sort of, it's strange to see those outliers there, right?
Mm. I see.
It's confusing, but I think I described it in, I thought it in a different way because I want to focus on the output. I really don't care about the errors.
Mm. Value of the errors.
Value of the errors.
Yeah, I think you highlight that. You should say that we would
model
different output regions differently.
Okay. Slide 19.
I have a comment there. I think you don't need to mention the
cluster
overall. Just forget about that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a detail you can avoid.
Okay.
People will.
So, do you explain it? I don't remember what all you said on this slide, but when you say clusters might overlap, then you go on to say how do you handle that scenario or
no? No, I said that the details are on the paper.
No, but then don't, if you're not even talking about it, then don't mention it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just remove that. It's a small detail that people who are interested might, you can answer that in the Q&A or you might see the paper.
That's cool. Okay, slide 21.
This is fine.
It looks pretty good. I think you did a great job of many of the slides that we discussed last time.
Yeah.
22.
Yeah, so my issue here is that on 22 and 23 are essentially the same graph, just as in slide 23 you have more data. So what you want to do is put the other graphs, the same graph that you have on 23, but without the additional data points. Exactly. And then
overlay it on.
Exactly. Overlay all the bars.
What I was suggesting to Sajeev is that on one slide, show only one benchmark, only one workload. So in 22, show only Rubis browsing.
Okay.
But show the next version of Rubis browsing. Go to the next slide.
This one.
So this one, right?
Okay.
Without the submodels. So what I would do is animate the second cluster and the fourth cluster.
Second and fourth?
Animate those in.
Yeah.
First you introduce what?
Global?
The global ones. And then you...
So just put the sub ones?
Yeah. Okay.
Animate those in. And just present that in the slide 22. And then
so probably I want to break it up then, 22 and 23.
Yeah. Break it up by workload.
By workload.
Then you focus on only one workload and you get more opportunity to talk about the numbers.
Okay.
Otherwise, there are just too many numbers on the slide, you cannot talk about these in detail. So
no, actually, while I was describing, okay, but global modeling only Rubis browsing, but we registered the higher errors even for other workloads like Rubis B. So
right, but I'm saying that if you bring in bidding at this point, you are sort of distracting from the message for browsing. Right? Finish the message on browsing, and then say, okay, we see a similar thing with bidding.
Okay.
And you don't have to spend too much time there. Just show the data.
Just show the data. Okay. Just show the final graph.
Yeah, just show the final graph for bidding.
Yeah.
Browsing, you can actually do a better.
Yeah, thing. And you may want to say we have a X percent amount of improvement in prediction error or something like that. Some summary.
Yeah.
Some key message that
visibility.
For browsing and then also for the bidding you can have that key message again.
Okay, so let's say in Rubis browsing I show it.
Yeah.
And then like a pop up.
Not on the same slide. On the next
not
slide.
On the same slide, but
yeah,
just say this is not here. But just pop up the message and say reduction of
exactly. Use some arrows or something
okay.
Like that.
And same for Rubis B.
But no bubbles, not a bullet.
No, like a bullet. I understand.
That's the only VM running, right?
Huh?
That's the only VM running? Or you have something in the background, some other VMs making noise?
Yeah, this is by themselves, yes.
This is by themselves.
There's another contention VM going on, which is just running FIO, I think.
So the purpose of that VM is to...
Well, yeah, I guess it's more...
No, but you can think about the same VMs running versus one VM running, but that purpose of the VM is to characterize the contention that might arise in a real setting.
So this also alludes to the cache contention issue, right?
Yes.
Because we don't have multiple workloads running and contending on the cache. The FIO is not really cache intensive.
No.
Right? It's just issues of large IO requests.
So, sorry, what do you do? I actually was very confused, and some of the confusion, now that I'm looking at it again. First of all, I think the stuff that you put side by side, then there's a tendency for people, their left side with right side.
Yeah.
But then I realized that these are completely two separate benchmarks, and there is no left and right side.
Actually, exactly what Raju is mentioning, that throw the Ruby's bidding out for this slide? I mean, just keep one benchmark at a time.
I think you don't. You should have a slide. You should just say Ruby's browsing has a slide, and then Ruby's bidding has a separate slide.
Yes.
But there is one more problem with this. Even if I just look at Ruby's browsing, okay, if you just look at that plot, now I don't know who is winning and who is losing and what should I focus on, because the bars are average and 19th percentile, so clearly there is no blue and there is no winner between blue and red. But then I don't know who is winner here. One has to really know what you mean by ANN Global, ANN Sub, SVM Global, SVM Sub, to then say that ANN Sub is winning over Global, SVM Sub is winning over Global. So I think even this, you can, so just have a slide for Ruby's browsing, and then show who is winning and who is losing.
Show the Global first, okay, and then animate the sub in afterwards. And you want to, you could possibly just split it into two graphs where you have ANN on the left side and SVM on the right side to make things more clear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you give this slide to somebody who hasn't seen your work, just ask him to point out the winner in this slide. I think people would have a hard time just figuring out who is winning.
I can just circle these things out, I mean, the winner.
There are two
I think that is one way, but better could be to split ANN Global Sub 1 and then SVM Global Sub into another.
Yeah. Because here that in browsing the ANN sub is winning, but in the bidding the SVM sub is winning, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if that's how you read it, but that's how I see it here. And the other thing is,
so you want me to do like when I put Ruby's browsing, just use ANN Global, ANN sub, and on the right hand side SVM Global, SVM sub,
yes.
Kind of that?
Yes. I think that would be better.
Okay.
But not for the bidding.
No. I'm talking about Ruby's browsing only.
Yeah,
and then the bidding can be a separate slide.
Yeah,
and then you can say that we saw a similar behavior for the other three workloads that I'm not on.
And as Boris said, I just put the summarization of numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And animate it carefully. So in the beginning, just put the ANN Global.
Okay,
just those data.
Yeah.
And then you put the ANN Sub.
Yeah.
No, then
no,
it's
because
global.
In the first one, you describe the axis.
ANN Global, so SVM Sub Global is doing the same.
Yes.
Same
okay.
Drawback, then focus
and then,
on
okay.
ANN Sub while phasing out the SVM and then bring in the SVM too.
Yes. Okay. That sounds good. So I
had a comment on this one in the next two lines. I guess our sub model, right? Okay. So I wasn't sure if it was sub model or ground model.
No, it's
sub model. Okay.
But I have to mention it in the work.
Yes.
I'm making sure.
Okay.
I'll make it sure.
This line.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that probably you can put it in the legend. That's what I looked for.
Yeah. ANN
sub.
Yeah. Just
similar to what you
just
for. Okay. Then I will just move out the prediction and say ANN sub, SVM sub.
Yeah. Remove prediction.
Exactly.
Everybody knows this prediction.
Yeah. That's where I look for the information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here I have to think about it.
Yeah. My concern again here is how do you tie those two things together? It wasn't clear. You have to be more specific. I mean, you have to make it flow easier.
The transition.
Yeah, the transition from the experiments you had before to how does it relate to the inside.
Sajid, can I mention a quick note on slide 23?
Yeah, sure.
You have this bottom that says 1.4161. It looks very odd. Is it possible to get some even numbers in here?
I think it's that. I use that as default value, so I don't know what the...
I guess you can change it.
Yeah. Or I will just move the x-axis, and it's not that important.
Yeah, this looks very odd. Why 61 and 81?
It's the problem with the PowerPoint. I don't know.
True. But I think it's a fixable problem.
Yeah, you should be able to fix it somehow.
Yeah, it's a fixable problem, it's just that the default one.
You should actually complex.
It's a PowerPoint, bro.
Okay, that's fine. Sorry to interrupt.
Actually, I was struggling. I spent a little bit of time trying to figure out how to do it, but eventually gave up.
Okay. The format, I can do that. You can click on the axis and there on the right click, there's a format axis.
Yeah, I did that, the same thing, but thing is that when you specify the difference between the spacing between the ticks, so somehow it was messing up then.
Okay.
I'll figure it out. Slide 25. Okay.
Yes, I think you have three tendons gel melt together. Why don't you say objective and then put first two bullets and then say the bottom that performance models can achieve both objectives.
Okay, that's a good.
Okay.
Okay.
And then inoptimal in this case. It's not clear, it's very overloaded term.
Slide 26.
You know, for some reason I always struggle with this figure. I don't understand very well what's happening.
Yeah,
it's hard to understand. And I think you also have to be careful when you introduce that bottom part. Because you just want to say something like that, more insults in the paper or something like that. Or say that and then say for details about this.
What is the conclusion of this slide? I mean, what
the slide is that we are achieving target performances in all the cases using our performance model, and we are optimal or nearly optimal in most of our sizing predictions.
What's the experiment?
The experiment is to put in a simpler word. Let's say you come up with your target performance for a Ruby's browsing workload and a contention level, the tolerable contention level, and you ask the performance model to estimate the required CPU and memory.
Okay.
The performance model using a binary search routine calculates that CPU and memory.
Oh, it's like the over.
So once you get that CPU and memory, run the actual experiment using that CPU and memory value and see what you are achieving in real life. And compare it with your targets. Now targets here are all normalized to 1, and if you are getting higher or at least same as target, that means you are good.
Okay. What's SWS?
It's the file bench word server.
I think you should expand these words. We discussed last time also.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And on this slide you mentioned, I think, once or twice, completely optimal. I think optimal is good enough in that case.
Okay. So optimal or near
optimal? Completely optimal versus near optimal.
Okay. And conclusion.
You know what Joe said to me? Like, you run these and you said that you should say exactly that.
I'm sorry?
You know how you explained me the experiment?
But in the same way?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I was in the end, I was rushing, so that's why. I had the same thing going on in my mind, but I had to rush to make it 23.
Okay.
But once I think one or two slides go away, I think I can have more time to describe the VM sizing experiments.
Okay.
Okay. Actually, I have to run. I have a few more comments. I have sent you an email.
Okay, I'll do
the comments that I mentioned. But overall, I think it's a much better talk. And
oh, yeah.
I think there are more things to improve, but we are getting there.
Thank you, man. Thank you for coming.
You're wrong.
You didn't need to practice a little bit more.
You're
yes.
In lunch here?
No, I'm not. Just I'll be back in like 5 minutes.
Okay.
A higher level comment, I think just practice transitions more. I think somebody already pointed that out, or that there were transitions where you say, now let's clean this thing. And it will be good to have a better transition into the site.
Hmm. More smooth, right?
Okay.
It feels naturally. Almost as if there is no next slide, it's like the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to leak them with no, it's like now come in and show you something.
Yeah, I agree. I think this comes with practice. So you listen to yourself. It's good that we are recording this. Listen to yourself and see how.
But what you guys do, I want to know. Like you and Ajay, I mean, and Kaushik, I mean, you guys do a lot of presentations. I mean, you do a practice a lot.
I think it's just having a flow in your mind that's entirely laid out, and or you lay it out a little bit, you know, 5 minutes ahead of time. So you're sort of thinking what you're going to say 5 minutes ahead of time before you get there.
Okay.
And then the whole 5 minutes is very automatic. Right? Or you could do what Jorge was suggesting, have the next slide up so you know what's coming on. Like, I don't know if you use that.
It automatically comes up in
this presentation mode.
Yeah.
Right, where you can
see. Comes up.
Right. So you could use that. Yeah, exactly. So you know which slide is coming up next,
yeah.
And prepare yourself and try to connect those two messages in a more seamless manner, right?
Any more comments from Kaushik or Ajay?
Okay, so I think we should stop. We're pretty close to the final thing, so just keep practicing and it will turn out well.
Okay, so I'm hanging up. So thank you for joining.